Mickey Hart here. You're listening to the GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're very welcome along to the GAR Football Show brought to you by AIB. Different type of show for you this week. We've obviously got no matches to preview, but it's a really good one. We're going to have Pádraig Duffy, Director General of the GAA, in the studio very soon, where we're going to talk to him about championship restructures and his idea. That's not really a restructure, it's more of an add-on to what we already have. Pat McEnany is going to talk to us, a brilliant referee, former chairman of the referee committee.
National Referee Committee,
that's it.
Money Association.
Yeah, something. whatever.
He throwing was a few seeds there as well.
He was the chairman of the referees in Ireland for 3 years. So he's going to come on, he's going to talk about the difficulty in stamping out this kind of sledging issue that's kind of raised its ugly head again all this week. Players trying to get each other sent off. It's all really horrible stuff. But joining me in studio this week are Conan and Mikey. Welcome, lads. Mikey,
yeah.
This is not your debut. You were here before for a qualifier match.
Yeah, we had an argument about Kevin McLaughlin, and now I think we're going to have an argument about Tipperary football, a subject very close to my heart. Everyone on Facebook's been having a go at me about it, so you might as well, I suppose.
Are they? Because I would have thought they would agree, because I saw Tomás O'Shea, who was tweeting about it, and said it's disgraceful, and, you know, on the face of it, it looks bad. But I don't know. My opinion on it is that there's a 13-day rule there for a reason. And if you have club games running, you know, alongside the inter-county game, like, that 13-day rule should be enforced, or else you're going to have the situation where all different counties have not got their championship run off. There's a backlog at the end of the year. Tipperary County Board has been slated last year because they haven't been able to run it off. So I don't think, and what happened here was that a few of the footballers decided amongst themselves we're not playing. So can players actually dictate to a district county board whether they play or not?
Well, clearly they can't, because
they're all out.
Because they're all out, and their clubs got fined on top of everything else. No, I agree with you that the rules are there, and obviously Tipperary is a county who played the replay of their football final in 2014 on St. Stephen's Day.
Yeah.
So they do have fixture issues. The idea is just, I think it was the spirit of the thing that kind of has got people, as you said, first All-Ireland semi-final in 81 years. You know, the fact that there's one lad playing wing back for the Tipperary Hurlers, fair enough, who'll be on the football team. There's another guy who's sitting outside the Hurling squad, O'Brien, isn't it? So you can't say that Hurling doesn't have the natural advantages in the county of Tipperary. So I was just saying, this would have been one little olive branch to throw them. It's, I know the West District Intermediate Hurling Championship might have been a bit put out, but I think it could have been fitted in. And I suppose this would be a bit negative to say, but chances are Tipperary aren't going to be involved after their next game, so there would have been a window. I just thought, I can see why Tipperary football folk, that small, small minority, are angry.
Yeah, it's not really in the spirit of 81 long years, Conan.
It's not in the spirit of the county. I just would ask, why don't they just wait?
Because rules are rules, Colin.
Well, rules are rules, but look at the grief that Jim McGuinness got by sending Donegal. Now, we're not playing any matches until we're through this championship. Like, he got no end of grief for that. But at the end of the day, I don't know. Club players' nose might have been out of joint, but every fan in Donegal, even those club players, probably thought, yeah, this is the right thing to do. Let's wait until after September, and then we'll get a good run on it. Why is it okay, or not okay, for Jim McGuinness to do it?
It's not okay for anybody, really, to dictate the clubs. But, like, I mean, this is the same situation. They're dictating the clubs that they're not playing. So, like, I mean, it's pretty much the same thing as what Jim McGuinness did. And it has to be pointed out, the three hurlers that are playing in the All-Ireland semi-final against Galway, they played just outside the 13-day rule. So it's not like they're just bullying the footballers. I know it looks bad in Tipperary, because Tipperary football is the poor relation, And this way, I think this got headlines.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, if this was in any other county, this wouldn't even be news, because like, I mean, the 13-day rule is there for a reason. The hurlers did it, yeah. So why can't the nine foot?
Hurlers are playing the same sport as well, though. Is that, should that not be taken maybe into account? That, you know, I think it was Colin Keeney was on the hurling podcast one day talking about the difference. You know, getting your eye in. He said it's easier for hurling than it is for football, but it is still something. If you're in football mode, and you're like, right, I have to go out and play a hurling match from a club now. I'm worried about getting injured. I'm playing a different sport. I've been training football all this time. I don't think I'll do my best for my club, and I'm really worried about missing out on the biggest game in my county's history for 81 years.
Yeah, and look, I think that's the point. And another point that needs to be made in the defence of the footballers is that they've been decimated by players not committing. They've been decimated by lads going to America. They've had injuries. So they have a very small squad, and there was nine of them up to play the games. So I can see, look, I can see it from both sides. I just didn't think it was as shocking when I heard that the hurlers did it, number one, and number two, that it was outside the 13-day rule. When you're outside the 13-day rule, you know, you don't really have a leg to stand on.
Yeah, maybe.
Especially with county board officials.
Maybe you should have gone with a request rather than if they went with a kind of an ultimatum to the West District. That's never going to work well with games administrators.
Maybe I'm not sure how they played this, but like, I mean, from what I was reading is that the players got together and says they're not playing. Like, I mean, is the better thing not to do is get together, get your management, go to them and say, can you please help us? Like, I'm not sure how it went, but like, county board are not going to respond too well with an ultimatum. And you
absolutely
know, so that
they
might
can
be.
They can take that approach before the All-Ireland final.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever tried to get fixtures changed in a with the county board? It's pretty tough, and unflexible.
No, well, I would be pretty sure that is the way it is. Anyways, this has gone down a lot more peaceful than what I thought it was. I thought this could have been a bit of a war here.
I don't know why I brought my gum shield.
Right. I think you're talking bullshit, Will.
All right, have manners, lads, because Pádraig Duffy's up next. Delighted to say I have Director General of the GEA, Pádraig Duffy, in the studio. Pádraig, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Colin.
This week, obviously, you announced, I won't say restructures, because they're not restructures. You added kind of add-ons to the championship that we already have. How have they gone down?
I look, in the GEA, everybody has their view. I suppose it's mixed. Overall, I'd be fairly happy with that. I mean, it's something for discussions out there. We'll let it sit now for a couple of months. It doesn't have to go before anybody for a decision, any kind of a decision, until November. Central Council will decide then if it's worth putting forward as a motion to Congress. So, you know, I think the initial reaction has been quite good. That doesn't mean that everybody's in favour of it. I don't think we have a proposal yet that everybody felt in the GEA was the best way forward. But look, as long as it gets a fair hearing, the one thing I would hope is that people will read the full document and then make up their minds. And we've sent it to all the counties, we've asked the counties to send it to all the clubs. So I would hope there would be a debate. And look, to be honest, Colin, the question I put to people is this: is it better than what's there at the moment? If it is, then let's give it a go. If it's not better, then forget about it. So, because there's no magic bullet, as I say here, there's no single solution that would solve all our problems around fixtures, structures, competitions, etc. But if this is better than what we have at the moment, then I think it's worth giving it a try. If it's not better, if people feel, no, this makes the situation worse, then I would say, yeah, don't go with it, bin it.
What part of you, when you were looking at these proposals, said, this is what I want, or this is what I'll be able to get through, or the easiest thing to get through Congress?
To be honest, you know, you start with the position of what are you likely to get through, because, you know, we've talked about this before we went on air. I mean, I could paper the House and the office and Croke Park with proposals that I've got over the past number of years, as have many journalists and so on. So there are any number of ideas out there. And I suppose you do start from a position of, OK, what might you be able to get through? So therefore, this is not, and I make no claims for this as a radical proposal. I hope it's an improvement on what's there at the moment. So you start from the position of what can you do? And as I outlined in the paper, there are a few things. You know, we had a long debate last year around a whole range of proposals. And I suppose the first thing that, and a lot of people won't like this, but the reality is that GAA members, as of now, want the provincial championships to remain. Now, you can say in many ways it's a flawed system, and I've spelled out why there are serious issues around it. Dublin's total dominance in Leinster, the fact that Munster over the past 80 years only Clare once have won a Munster title, everything else has gone to Cork and Kerry. Connacht, I suppose, up until this year was very much Mayo's preserve, and Ulster was the one that was just truly competitive. So you can say the provincial system is flawed, and I absolutely understand that, but the reality is, if you went to Congress with a motion to change the championship structure without provincial championships, you wouldn't have a hope. And that's the first reality you have to. And that's probably the most pertinent point, really. So it's a question of trying to see, can you bring about an improvement, but that keeps the provincial championships not only alive, but you could play provincial championships in January and February and say you're keeping the provincial system. That wouldn't wash either. People see the provincial championships as part of the system, and until that view changes, and it probably will change over 10, 20, 30, 40 years, but at the moment that's the view, so you have to work around that.
Yeah, well, we'll get into your proposals in a minute, you know, because there's obviously huge advantages, and it's very, very exciting around this time of the year if they get brought through. Yeah. There's obviously disadvantages for certain counties, and we'll talk about that.
Sure.
First, I want to pull you up on a couple of quotes, because in your... In your January annual report, you said, but if we decide not to change the structures, then let us accept that the current structures are the best that are available to us. Now, this was after the GPA's, the Division 4 B Championship didn't get through Congress. Yeah. This was before Congress. You're saying, OK, if that doesn't get through Congress, let us just forget about it altogether. You know, why did you change your mind on that?
That was my thought, but I suppose... Because you really can't, you're not allowed to forget it, because it keeps being raised by people both within the association and without. So, I suppose after Congress there was a general dissatisfaction with the way the proposal for Division 4 didn't even get to the floor, because the county said, no, we don't want it.
Yeah.
And you kind of feel, you just can't leave it like that. So, I did say that, absolutely, and that was my view at the time, but... Clearly, the association won't accept that. So therefore, if they won't accept it, you've got to do something about it.
Yeah, OK. One more. This is a quote from you on the GPA proposal that didn't even get through at all for discussion at Congress. Yeah. You said, clearly, you cannot have a principle that says we want to protect the club game and then turn around and recommend a proposal that increases the number of championship games.
Yeah.
But your proposal here increases the amount of championship games.
It does. I accept that. And it increases them in total by a total of 8. The GPA proposal went from 64 to 91, which is 27 games. So there's a big difference. But I do take the point. My mind does advocate an increase.
An increase in the summer where, clubs should be going ahead.
But I also say in the paper that if we're going to do this, there are two other things we have to do. We have to end the replays. So that would obviously save a number of games. And we have to condense the season, which I think is the most important thing. I think the problem is, and again, I've made this point in the document, and I know this from my experience of knowing players in my own club in Monaghan and so on. Once the season starts in January or before, when players start preparing for the league and championship, clubs don't see their players really until they're out of the championship. They might play some games, all right, but certainly for training, they won't see them again.
Yeah, and the 13-day rule is not enforced.
No, it's not enforced. I mean, and even if it was, counties aren't going to fix championship games a week before the county plays a game. So the big problem clubs have is they just don't see their players. And they will say to you, look, the time we want our players back is we want them for our own club championships. So I've come round to the view now that if we can condense the season and you try to play then, that in other words, that most counties are finished by early July, preferably, not all, but most, and then the next part of the year belongs to the clubs. And I think that's what we have to move to. So you're right, I did say no increase, but I do believe that if we can use this debate around this proposal it would bring an increase of 8 games, but to condense the season, there actually would be a benefit. My objection to the GPA proposal, and which they put a lot of thought into, and I absolutely admire that, was that to go from 64 to 91, there's no way you could increase it by that number and not hugely affect clubs. With this proposal here, if you get rid of replays, if you condense the season, in fact, you can make it a better situation for clubs.
Yeah, I think for maybe 24 clubs it'll be better, but for 8 counties clubs, it's going to actually be a lot worse, because their season is going to get longer and it's going to be more condensed, so there's no room for clubs. So 8 out of 32 is a quarter of the clubs. So, I know there's no perfect situation with this.
Okay, well, just okay. We'll take first of all, it will be better for 24, which is a plus. Now, for the 8 remaining counties...
But the only thing, for 24 of those counties, a lot of them are out in June, July anyways. Improving them either way.
Clearly, the counties who go out early, this is not a problem for them anyway. And by the way, what I presented as an appendix proposal was, by making a couple of minor changes, you can do this. I also said this is not necessarily the best. If you sit down and if there's a willingness on everybody's part to condense the championship, that 2 weeks can become 4 weeks. In relation to the 8 teams that are left, it would mean they'd be playing for 1 week longer than the moment, which is a negative. The problem is that when you get to the quarterfinals of the championship, as we do at the moment, and you have a gap from the quarterfinals to semifinals, no club championship games would be played in that space anyway. Counties just don't play them. So I accept, it is a week longer for 8 counties. It's a couple of weeks better for others. But that's only a template of what you might do. If you condense the championships and put them into a shorter, period of 4 months instead of 5, that can make a difference. And I wouldn't go, if I felt this was going to make it worse for clubs, I'd say, forget about it. Unless we're prepared to act on the replays and condense the fixtures, I would say, no, forget about this.
Yeah, and I don't want to start off in a negative tone, but, for clubs, especially when they're knocked out in June, July, or early, if the season is condensed, like, they'll finish their county championships a lot earlier, and then you've got the Dublin, so they're going to have to wait for 6 to 8 weeks until Dublin finish their championship, for example in Leinster, until they get a chance to play Dublin in the Leinster club. Do you know what I mean? Unless everything's been shortened, then shortening 24 is no good.
But look, I mean, what you're saying there is correct. I mean, and you're going to have a situation where some counties will finish earlier than others and will be more advanced with their club championships. But the GAA fixture, you've got to look at this in the context of the whole GAA fixture problem. I mean, John Allen wrote an article in the Irish Times a couple of weeks ago, I don't know if you saw, where he advocated that, look, maybe the time has come that that inter-county players shouldn't play with their clubs at all.
I think there's an argument for that. Well, it would solve a lot of problems.
It would solve an awful lot of problems. But again, is it going to happen? The answer is no. Nor do I think it should happen, because for clubs who develop players and so on, next thing a guy goes to the county and you never see him again. And I know, and you know from your own county, club rivalries and club passion is every bit as important, if not more important to people than inter-county rivalry. So I can see where he's coming from.
But they have the choice to make. The county lads could actually stay with the clubs if that was so important to them.
Yeah, but I don't think people want to do that. I mean, I know, again, we have, in my own club, Scotstown, we have 5 lads who play with the county, and two of them are students who are have now gone to the States. The other 3 are back training with us again. But those fellas are loyal to the club. For them, playing with the club is every bit as important as playing for the county. And I think the most club players are the same. To find a way to make it possible for both is very difficult.
Very difficult.
Very difficult. And not impossible, but very, very difficult, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about the most exciting part of the proposal anyways. It's the round robin. I think everybody knows what it is now. Yeah. It's basically the All-Ireland quarterfinals. You have 4 provincial winners. You have 4 teams coming out of the qualifiers. Yeah. And instead of playing All-Ireland quarterfinals, those 8 teams are going to go into 2 groups of 4.
Correct.
And are going to play each other. Yeah. 4 games will be in Croke Park. The rest will be on a home and away basis.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't wait for that.
Yeah, I think there's a few things about it. I think you start off with everyone plays a game in Croke Park, the 4 games.
Yeah.
And then, I think what positive is that the provincial champions play each other in the first game, which means that after, in both groups, after the first round, 2 provincial champions are going to be down 2 points. They've lost a game.
Yeah, that's important, really.
That's important, because they try and keep it alive into the last rubber. And then you go into the provinces. I think the idea of having, you know, for example, Kerry going up to play Tyrone and Ome in a championship game, or Dublin heading to Donegal to play Ballybuffet or whatever it might be, I think we don't have those games. It's a very, very rare thing. And we remember them when we have them. Everyone remembers the trip that Tyrone made in the qualifiers a few years ago down to Kerry. It was a fantastic occasion.
Yeah.
And I remember the semi-final. I'd have to say the most atmospheric game I've been at during my time as Record General was the game that caused a lot of grief a couple of years ago when Kerry went to play Mayo in Limerick. The atmosphere was incredible.
Yeah, right. In hindsight it was.
It was, and I know there are a lot of good reasons why people were unhappy about that, but it was. And I think to play 8 major championship games at 8 provincial venues, you take Tipperary. I welcome Michael Quinlivan's comments today where he was saying, okay, people said, well, okay, Tipperary, if this system was in vogue, you pulled off a shock. If it was in 3 games, it would be harder. But he said, look, it'd be fantastic for Tipperary to be playing at home in a major football championship game. So I think there's pluses in it, and I hope that people will look at some of those.
Yeah, because exactly. And like, instead of Tipperary, I know they got to a semi-final this year, but usually a Tipperary would lose in a quarter-final. So instead of having 1 game in a quarter-final, they have 3. You know, so I don't see any minuses for that. I think that it's a really, really good idea, and it gives us really good games on a regular basis in the height of summer.
Yeah, I'll make one other point about that, Colin. I'm speaking from my experience in Monaghan. Monaghan won 2 Ulster championships in the past 3 years, and both times they came to Croke Park, and both times they met Tyrone, who had come through the qualifiers, and both times they lost. And it was a real anti-climax. Now, if that had been the first of 3 games, you'd feel so much different. You'd know that, okay, next game we'll have a home game against somebody else. And even if you lost the 3 games, you'd feel, well, we won an Ulster title, we got value for our money in terms of the All-Ireland stage, and we're out. And you'd accept that. But you lose 1 game, we lost the famous one, the Sean Kavanagh, the Conor McManus incident, etc., etc. It leaves you feeling a bit cheated in terms of the first game you've lost.
Yeah.
Even take Tyrone this year. Tyrone won the McKenna Cup, they won every game in the league, they won the Division 2 final, they won the Ulster Championship, never lost a game. They lose 1 game narrowly last week and they're gone. No second chance. So at least everybody, there's an inequality in this too, that everybody gets at least a second chance of sorts.
Yeah, in fairness, you know. Well, just a question on that. Where will Dublin play their home games?
Well, Dublin will play their home games presumably in Croke Park. So that does give them an advantage.
But it does. I'm surprised at that.
Well, the point I'd make is, to be fair to Dublin, that's no different than it is at the moment. They went to, as we all know, to Nolan Park this year. But that's no different.
Let's not mention the war here.
No, that's not mentioned exactly, especially to a Leishman. But the one point I would make is, the one thing this would guarantee with Dublin is, this year, every year, Dublin will have to head down the country. And that would be brilliant for the championship, because to be fair to Dublin, they bring supporters, their supporters will travel. Dublin playing an away game in the championship, not a once-off every few years as we had this year, but on a regular basis, I think that'd be brilliant for the championship.
Ah, look, listen, there's absolutely nobody arguing with that. Mm. But why would Dublin's home game be in Croke Park? Why would it not be, for example, if you wanted to be fair about it, move it even to Nolan Park, to a Moor Park,
yeah,
make them go out of Croke Park? Because Croke Park is their home venue. Like, if it's supposed to be a home and away basis,
yeah,
why do Dublin get the advantage of getting their home game
in
their home ground?
No, it's a point. I mean, look, the proposal is a proposal. It's not the detail that could be looked at, and then that's fair enough. I'm sure, to be fair to Dublin.
Would you not think about that before you would, you know, make that decision, that, you know, fingers are going to be pointed at a decision like that, and it's going to be pointed in the direction of the GAA want more revenue out of the Dubs, and that's why they're, you know what I mean, that's why they're doing that. When you're actually sitting down to do that, would you not do it on the fairer basis rather than give them the Croke Park and allow these criticisms come at you?
Well, look, I'm sure if this proposal is passed, there'll be plenty of tweaks and changes before the final version comes out. The one thing I would say just about the financial side of it, if we wanted to enhance our finances, you'd say, right, we'll play this round robin and we'll play all the games in Croke Park, because Croke Park, there's no question about it, because of the facilities available, the number of seats, etc., etc. Financially, that would be far, far more advantageous. But we're saying here, the 8 extra games will all go to the provinces. Now, I take your point about Dublin. To be fair to Dublin, I think Dublin enjoy, and the players love going to the provinces.
They
may well have no objection to it, and I'm sure it's something that can be discussed. But as it stands, I didn't write this in terms of just looking at Dublin. I looked at it in terms of the general rules would be one home, one away, one in Croke Park.
Yeah, okay. You know, the question will be asked that what the weaker teams are getting out of this. You know, it's obviously brilliant for the teams, and, you know, the same faces are showing up in the quarterfinals. We get the few years, you know, like this year, which throws up a surprise or two, or you might get one of the eight to throw up a surprise. But in general, it's the same old faces that are showing up in the quarterfinals. So their year is immeasurably improved, and it's improved for supporters, it's improved for journalists, for media, it's improved for everybody, except for maybe Division 3, Division 4, outside of the top two in Division 3 who can maybe get promoted and relegated to Division 2, their season's not improving in any way, shape or form, and they are a group of counties that still feel that they're not getting much out of the championship.
No, look, this is the big question, and I absolutely accept that. I'll just make a couple of comments first of all. I think in terms of Division 3 this year, Tipperary have made it to the last four, Clare made it to the last eight, Westmead made it to the last 12, and Longford who had a...
Now, the last 12 is the last 16. It was just on... Well, they just came the week before.
Well, put it a different way. In terms of Longford beat, in the qualifiers, beat Downaway, beat Monaghan away, and lost Narrowly to Cork. And I would say they'd feel they had a great season, because they had a great season.
Yeah.
The problem... So Division 3 teams can make progress. I mean, they can. I mean, it's happened in the past. Now, Division 4 is a different problem, and I accept that. And it is very difficult. And to be fair to the teams in Division 4, you know, it's very difficult for them. If you take counties like Carlow, Wicklow, Waterford, they simply don't have the resources. They haven't got the playing population, they haven't got the number of clubs. And I'm not sure if they want to play in the Championship, the All-Ireland Championship, with other 31 counties. I'm not so sure that how you can facilitate that in a way that will develop the game. We had a proposal last year that they would play... Division 4 teams would play their own championship and the winners would go into the qualifier then the following year. They wouldn't have it. And
you see, the reason they wouldn't have that, and this is the way I look at this, is because when you cut Division 4 off, they're clearly, like, they're Division 4 for a reason. When you cut them off and say, good luck, you're on your own, like, they're just never going to accept that.
I
you call it
that.
A B championship, and suddenly no one ever wanted to be in the B anything, you know? So
I agree. I agree with you, Colin. I totally agree, and I understand why they said that. The problem is, though, when you go into a championship situation, everybody is guaranteed two games, provincial championship, at least one game in the qualifier. But somewhere along the line, the better teams are going to come to the top. That's what sport is about.
Yeah.
And it's cruel sometimes. And I know that the weaker counties say, oh, what is in it for us? If they tell us what they want, we will try to do that. We're absolutely open to that. But nobody has managed to come up with a proposal yet that gives them more games. But there have to be games that would be of interest to the public. I'll give you an example. One of the solutions out there proposed, Martin McHugh proposed, 8 groups of 4, where you'd have one Division 1, Division 2, Division 3, Division 4.
That's the same thing. Conan, actually, on this show, he likes that proposal as well, a World Cup or a Champions League type model.
The problem is that even teams Division 4, for example, you know, playing teams Division 1.
They'll be hammered in that as well.
That's the fear. That's the fear. And it's look, I agree. I would love to have a proposal that meets the needs. And we're open to that. We're absolutely open to that. But I said to you at the beginning, though, it holds true. Until we get something better, if this is better than what we have at the moment, then we should go with it. But if there's something better out there, I'd love to hear it. But we haven't seen it yet.
Well, the thing that confuses me here is that Division 4 don't want to play in a second tier. Like, I think if you group Division 4 on their own, they'll get all defensive and they'll say, we're not part of anything.
Yeah.
But why can't they be grouped with Division 3 and called a Division 2? And then 1 and 2 be called Division 1, like, and have 16 and 16, where Division 4 are not feeling like they're being cut aside, yeah. You know, they're outcast, they're no good, because Division 3 has some good solid teams. Then the winners of that that second division, if the two winners, the two finalists, they'll get into the main, you know, the Division 1 the following year. So there's that carrot that you're getting promoted and back, because the way I look at it is that not enough teams have a chance of winning anything at the end of the year, and this change isn't going to change that at all.
No.
And I was writing on Sports Joe, my experience of when I joined Laois first, we had no chance of winning anything, and it's very hard to do the winter training and give that commitment. Yeah. And that commitment back then was nothing like it is now. They're asked to train 4 or 5 nights a week now, and they've no chance of winning anything. Mm. So, like, I mean, without, as my Laois career went on, suddenly then we had a chance of winning the Leinster, and the difference in the January, yeah, February, March months of commitment levels, of numbers of training, was massive. Yeah. So why not give the Division 3 and 4 teams a chance of winning an All-Ireland, like, and call it the Division 2 All-Ireland, you know, or do
absolutely
something like that?
No, no, look, Colin, absolutely. And I mean, if there was a willingness out there, and I've often asked the question, I mean, in hurling we accept this principle the whole way through. We have the McCarthy Cup with 12 teams, then we have the Christy Ring, we have the Nicky Record, and we have the Laurie Maher. But in football, there is simply no willingness at the moment to accept that. Like, and a lot of the proposals that came in last year were around variations of what you're talking about. And yeah, Eugene McGee has spoken about 2 16s. There are plenty. But
at club level, the blueprint is there. Like, yeah, there's senior, intermediate, junior A, junior B, and that's accepted. Mm. In league football, there's 4 leagues. But suddenly, when it comes to the All-Ireland, the Division 3 and 4 counties feel that they have the God-given right to be competing with the big boys, just because that's the way it's always been. But I think that there needs to be a separation here and say, you get to play the big boys when you're good enough and at that level, and we will give you that opportunity if you win if you win that competition.
Yeah, look, we're open to this. No one has the answer here, and a lot of those ideas have been thrown out. I would prefer a proposal that everybody said this meets all our needs.
Yeah.
But it, that's the way the league is structured, Division 1, 2, 3 and 4, which makes the league so competitive, and it's
a great competition.
It is great competition, but it's very hard to replicate that in the championship in a way that meets everyone's needs.
Yeah, I think it is. I like, you know, I think weaker counties will have that complaint, and they'll always have that complaint. And without, like, I know you're not, it's not a restructure you're doing. And is this a case that you're doing a little bit this year and you're doing a bit more? Because obviously at the start of this year, you didn't want to do anything.
No, correct.
And now you're doing a little bit. Yeah. And is this like a first step on a...
This is modest. And absolutely. And if the terminology, okay, if it's a Division 4 counties or Division 3 counties come and say, look, we have a better idea, then we'd love to hear that. But I do think, whatever we do, I do think there is a demand from people to see the top counties playing each other in the summer. They play in Division 1 of the league, which gets great crowds and so on. But in the closing stage of the summer, you go down to it's just quarterfinals, semifinals, finals, you have 7 games there of in total. I think there is a demand among the GAA public to see that more of the top teams play each other. And that's what this is addressing. It's not addressing all of the problems out there, and I understand that.
Yeah. Just to go back to the revenue issue, because, you know, you're obviously saying that if all the games are in Croke Park, you could be accused of, you know, just doing it for revenue. But that's not to say that your revenue is not going to increase a lot because of this. You're going to get a lot of revenue.
Yep.
And just one point I wanted to pull you up on was, also I think it's an important point to make, the 8 extra games, none of them in Croke Park, if it's supposed to be a revenue generator, all of the games would be in Croke Park. Then you go on to say that the extra revenue will be shared to weaker counties. Now, if I was cynical, I would say that's an attempt to actually soften the blow for weaker counties and say, look, you're not getting anything on the playing side. Yeah. But if we sweeten you with a few quid and you're going to get the revenue from this, then you might vote for it.
Okay, well, I can understand people saying that. How I see it is this. If you take the counties that need help, they need it's more coaches, more resources and so on. And to be honest, no matter what you do, you take a county like Leitrim, which is a fantastic GAA county, well-organised, good clubs and so on, but they have a population of about 30,000 people. Now, all you can do in a county, it's very hard to bring in a structure that allow them or Waterford or Wicklow and so on to compete with Dublin or Kerry and Cork. But this is a genuine proposal. If this does go through, we need to take an element of a significant element of the increased revenue and say, right, we're going to use that money to develop the game in those counties through extra coaches, whatever it might be.
But can you not use other money to do that, for example? Like, even it's not like the GAA are stuck for money.
Well, I just made the point, Colin. I know people think we have plenty of money, but we do spend all the money we get. We don't run into profit, and at the moment we put €10 million per year into coaching, so we have coaches all over Ireland, and there's always a huge demand for resources. What I'm saying is, here though, you'd put this money aside to develop these counties, and that's it. I wouldn't want The last thing this is about making more money. If we generate more revenue, it should be ring-fenced to develop the games in counties that need support. Now, people can question our motives if they want to. I'm telling you, that's my motive in writing that as part of the proposal.
Yeah, look, and I obviously have to put these questions to you.
Sure, yeah.
The question about, and this is a related topic, and it's something that really bothers me about, you know, it's all about democracy in the GAA, and everything has to go through Congress or, you know, provincial level, and you've got delegates voting on these things. But it's not really democracy because, like, I mean, county boards are desperate for money now. A lot of them are struggling big time. So they've always got their hands out either to the Leinster Council, Ulster Council, you know, to provincial councils. So it's very hard for them to vote objectively when it's up, you know, up for a vote. Again, with this Congress, these proposals, I'll see the Leashes, the Carlows and, you know, Leitrims, any county that's in the second or third and fourth division who might not benefit on the field from this. Now, I don't want to be too hard on Leash because maybe they might. But, like, I mean, they're going to be going to this Congress now and they're going to go, right, OK, we're not getting anything on the playing side, but... And this is a county board member now who's aware about the financial difficulties. If I vote for this and get this in, my life is going to be made immeasurably easier next year because I'm not going to have to fundraise. I'm not going to have to do anything. Is that really democracy if the delegates voting are dependent on the GAA for to keep their county boards alive?
The first thing I would say is there's no county. I mean, every county, take the counties. OK, we'll leave Leash out of it. But what take counties like, for example, in Division 4. They're going to do exactly the same as they've done before. They'll play the league, they'll play the championship, they'll play the qualifier and so on. So it doesn't, and hopefully, you'd hope that one of them might come through, but that may not happen. So in terms of that element of the finances, it makes absolutely no difference. Okay, they could see a benefit in terms of if this goes ahead, there'll be money put a benefit for coaching. Yeah, that's fair enough. But it is, democracy is, people look at all the various angles and make up their mind. Look, democracy can be very frustrating and there'll be all kinds of arguments and issues raised around this. And that's what democracy is. And all of us, no matter what job we're in, would love from time to time to have the right to just make the decisions and make things happen. But we have to accept that's the way the GAA operates from club level right through.
But county boards are not autonomous because they are looking for handouts. So, you know, that revenue flow is dependent on how they vote. So Congress is kind of flawed that...
Well, look, this is only one element. I mean, we an awful lot of money goes into counties from Croke Park, arising from our commercial revenue, broadcast revenue, gate receipts, and so on.
Yeah.
This is only another element of that. So, and they're not all utterly dependent on Croke Park. To be fair, a lot of them raise a lot of their own money, and they have to. Like, we're spending, the inter-county game is costing about $20 million per year to counties in terms of funding the inter-county game. But I don't really think, okay, a small number of counties will see a direct financial benefit from this in terms of the weaker counties, but I don't think that will influence the decision. What would concern me is, I think what's more likely to happen is, I think some of the weaker counties may say, well, there's nothing in this for us, therefore, in terms of developing the game. And I understand that, but if someone can come up with a structure that does meet the needs of the weaker counties, we're willing to listen to that. But we've run out of ideas. We tried one last year, it didn't work. We need the county to tell us, what do you want to do? But it has to be something that makes sense, that produces competitive games, that our supporters will want to go to see. And we're waiting on that idea still.
Yeah, because I know when the GPA's proposal didn't get through, Desi came out and said that they were going to set up this working group of past, present players and a nice mix with club players in there as well. That hasn't happened yet. And I'm surprised that hasn't happened because, you know, their proposal obviously didn't get through. Now you're coming out with a proposal without having, you know, that discussion group having ever taken place. And I'm just wondering how... Because you're in negotiations with the GPA a lot recently with their new deal. How has this all come about?
That's a fair point. No, what happened was, I mean, I've been working on this. It mightn't seem that way, but I've been working on it for a number of months. And we had been in discussions at parallel with the GPA on the agreement, which has just been made. And I did, about a week before I gave this to put this into the public domain, I met with Desi and I said, look, I have this document, it's a proposal that I've brought to our management committee. They think it's worth putting out there. I don't want you to feel that we've done this, and we haven't, completely separate from the GPA. I mean, this may die the death. And he accepted it was done in good faith and so on, and it's a matter for the GPA whether to support it or not. But look, this may not...
Sean Potts has supported it, has he?
I think, look, I wouldn't want to speak for the GPA. To be fair, they're an independent voice, and you know, obviously I would hope they'd welcome, but that's up to them. But what I would say is, look, this may or may not go anyplace. It's quite possible. You know, Congress, as you said earlier, we have to, for this to pass, would take two-thirds majority at Congress, which, is, as I've found in the past, is not easy to get. So this may not fly, and if it doesn't fly, then there'll be ample opportunity for the GPA and ourselves and any other group that wants to come forward with further ideas. I don't think this issue is going to go away. I thought after last year's debate it would, but it clearly isn't.
You hoped.
So I'm kind of a bit wiser now. I accept that this may not go through. It may not, even if it gets half the support or more, it may not get the two-thirds. So we may well be in a place where we'll have to look for other ideas from, again, But, you know, you'd like to bring it to some kind of a conclusion, at least an interim conclusion over the next year or two.
And did the GPA explain why they didn't actually set up that working group, or did that come up in the discussions with you?
In fairness, the agreement that we've just made with the GPA, in fact, puts a formal structure around those kind of things. That will happen. We will be actually discussing these and other issues. There's a very good format now for discussions on a number of issues. That will inevitably come up again.
Yeah. There's another cynical view out there in that the GPA got a lovely deal this time, you know, maybe, you know, so that they might come in on board and back this proposal.
That's just not true. And I think
Or that the extra games might actually sponsor that extra few quid that they got. So
that is are two completely separate issues. I'm surprised that you're so cynical, Colin. It's not like
that's a cynical view that's out there, Pádraig.
Oh, I know, yeah.
You know, the provincials, I'll finish on the provincials because you've mentioned them already, and in my opinion, they're the biggest problem within the GAA. And I agree that they'll never go because they're so ingrained, and the whole structure of the GAA, you know, is kind of based around them, the provincial councils and, you know, delegates, county boards and all those links. But surely they have to be separated. Now, and I don't mean, if you say put them in January or February, that's OK, I agree that that's devaluing them and that's fine. But put them in March or April and play them as a cup competition and make sure that the winners then get some sort of, you know, kind of carrot that if they win them, they're getting seeded or whatever in the next competition, that you're separating them, because that's where all the inequality lies, you know, the provincials, and nothing will improve while they're still linked. Keep them by all means, but don't link them into the All-Ireland series. Is there a way of doing that?
Just a couple of points I'd make with the provincial championships. Look, I know at the moment they've gone through a tough time, particularly in Leinster football, I suppose. And you had made the point yourself actually earlier that for Laois, at a certain point in your career, the aim of winning a Leinster championship actually was a real goal. Now, unfortunately, what's happened in Leinster over the past 10 years, it has become, you know, one county dominant virtually, and that has damaged it. But I'd have to say, the problems that I'm from in Ulster, winning the Ulster championship is a huge thing. And for the county there, for my own county of Monaghan, winning two Ulster championships in the last 3 years has been fantastic for the game. And we're probably not good enough to win in All-Ireland. And the provincial championship in Ulster attracts huge crowds, huge provincial rivalries. And I know, if you were to suggest tomorrow, and it wouldn't be a matter of county board officials or old fogies in suits, etc., supporters and players in Ulster would say to you, we want the Ulster championship
to
survive.
But if they're so prestigious, why would that not still hold in March?
Like, because it's prestigious because it's part of the All-Ireland structure.
I think they're prestigious because it's a chance of winning something. Do you see, Pádraig, the way some counties celebrate winning the McKenna Cup, for example? And that's in January in the muck and rain. Now, okay, they don't celebrate it, but it's a competition that they're happy to win, that they enter and they want to win. That's in January and they're not seen as any way prestigious. Play the provincials in March. And I think that provincials is still a cup. You've got two competitions to win all year, the provincials and the All-Ireland. I don't see how the prestige of them would suffer at all.
I think it would. We'll have to differ on this one. I think it would. I think that for players and supporters, the provincial championships, and I said I'd take Ulster as the best example because it's probably the most successful one. But
10,000 show up to McKenna Cup games in January in the freezing cold.
That's because people are hungry for action.
Yeah, but make the provincials the start of the season in March.
Yeah, I don't think it would be the same. That's my view. I accept you have a different view, but I think the view would still be that it's an important part of the championship structure, and until that changes, or to come up with a structure that changes that, I think it'll remain as part of it.
Yeah, another quick one is that another big issue within the GAA is the 9-month season. Now, your changes haven't changed that in any way, you know, and that has the knock-on effect on club, it has a knock-on effect on third-level competitions, you know, provincial club, All-Ireland club, all these things, because it's a behemoth. It's 9 months. Like, it's too long, and it's too long for players to keep that level of fitness, dedication, you know, the overtraining. Yeah. All these issues are linked to the 9 months. Why did you not try to shorten it?
Well, we're trying to solve one problem at a time. The reason why it's so extended is because you have players who play football and hurling, you have players who play club and intercounty, you have players who play third level football and hurling, you have players who play county of the 21 teams. It's the whole mishmash, if you like, of competitions and their interaction and how one affects the other. I mean, in simple terms, it's because so many of our players play on multiple teams. You take counties like Cork and Wexford, for example, where and most of the club players play both games, and trying to make fixtures then on a weekend where, say, the county hurling team is playing, well, you can't play football games that day because there's fellas playing with the county and so on. It's just extremely complex, and I know it's easy for people to criticise, and I understand that, and I would like a much more condensed week by week season, and we will work on that. But it's at the moment, let's take it one step at a time. If we could condense the season, address the replays issue, and agree on a championship structure, that'd be a huge step forward. And then you try to move to the other problems having agreed that. At the moment, we need to agree that first, I think.
Yeah, okay. Are you confident that they'll get through?
I wouldn't say I'm confident. I think, look, last year we brought a number of very good proposals around replays and et cetera, and we got over half the votes, didn't get 2/3. Now, that's always, is that, I think...
You see, the replays didn't get through because there's less revenue and that they're not going to get their hand down. So it's really difficult to get these things.
I do think, though, there may be there's a change in the atmosphere, so I think people realise we've just got to do so. It may not go through again. But the point I'm making is more than half the delegates to Congress voted to bring forward the All-Ireland final. So there is a you're starting from a reasonable point there. Look, the problem is, I think it's just hard to get a consensus. We'll put out the arguments as best we can and hope for the best, but I wouldn't say I'm confident. I'm hopeful.
Okay, Pádraig, thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks, Colin. Thank you.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it 3 times.
It's in around you. But you're looking at me. You're looking
out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
All the talk this week has been about sledging and provoking players, trying to get a reaction out of them. Pull your man down to the ground, you have a little wrestle, you'll both get yellow cards, this kind of issue. So I'm delighted to say we have former National Referees Chairman and probably the best referee that's ever ref games I've been involved in, Pat McEnany. He's on the line. Pat, do you think this is a big problem in the game?
Is it a problem in the game? I think it's featuring in a game at the moment. We've seen incidents of it in this year's championship. It's been in our game a long, long time. Is it right across the country? Is it in every county? No, I don't believe it is. I think some counties are worse than others. You know, the certain counties, you know, who I've refereed over the years, and it's not an issue at all. So it's not widespread, but it is in our game. Yes, Colin.
There's an opinion out there. I was reading Eugene McGee spoke on Monday, and even Darragh O'Shea, who would have played the game recently, said that this has always been going on in the game. And in my opinion, it hasn't to this level always been in the game. How have you seen it develop throughout your time refereeing?
Colin, I remember refereeing you, and I'll tell you one thing, you weren't behind the fence when it come to talking now. I'll tell you that, you had an opinion there. I actually thought that you would have made a good referee, and I thought you were very good at talking. But I think, you know, sledging, and it's a slightly more aggressive manner in today's game. But it was there, you know, if I take you back to the days when I started out and learning my trade with Derry and Tyrone going really well, I can tell you that there was a lot of it going on back even then. And it's always in our game. I think, you know, we watch much, you know, you have more television now, more cameras, you know, so it's getting greater exposure now. And you know, that, you know, if you've seen in the Mayo Tyrone game, you know, when a player maybe lost possession or ball it over the line or missed a score, there was maybe one or two players coming up and verbally abusing them. And that's not a good presentation in our game. And I think it needs to be stamped out.
Yeah, and I don't think that's always gone on. Like, verbals have always been in the game and always will. But, like, I mean, kind of this structured kind of tactics of two or three fellas gathering around somebody, shouting at them when they're at their weakest and most vulnerable, when they miss a score or, you know, lose the ball. I don't think that's always been there, has it?
Not to the, maybe to the extent that we have at the minute. Not to the extent that we have it at the minute. I think it's probably more prevalent in our game at the moment.
Yeah. One thing I want to get from a referee's point of view is there's two fellas wrestling on the ground. We saw it with Aidan O'Shea and Caroon from Westmeath. The replay showed that Caroon just grabbed Aidan O'Shea, grabbed him down to the ground, and they're wrestling on the ground. Paul Galvin was on the show on Monday, and he said it happened to him as well, where he was just got in a headlock, came down, referee runs down, and both players get yellow cards. Now, from a referee's point of view, it's very, very difficult. Obviously, you're away from the place, so you're not seeing who started it. But it's very frustrating for players that both the aggressor and the victim get the same punishment.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it's something, you know, when I was chairman of the National Referees that we looked at, and we went, you know, I'm always looking, you're always looking for the instigator, who instigated it. Because there has been times where there was only the instigator, yet the linesman or the umpire or even the referee at times would take the easy option and just go down and flash 2 yellow cards. And we encouraged at that time was, all we want is the instigator here. The problem is that when you have the instigator, and then it's natural, it's only natural for the guy you know, I pull you to the ground. You wrestle me to the ground, and you're pulling me and you're rolling around with me on the ground. The natural instinct for me is I need to protect myself here.
Yeah.
So I need to do the very same thing or some sort of retaliation. So that needs a change in rule. I believe if you had a change in rule was we only want the instigator. If you strike me first, you're the instigator.
Right.
Or you pull me to the ground. But that needs a change in rule.
Right, so referees' hands are tied in this one. Even if they do see the aggressor, you know, because both are wrestling, you know, they're both getting yellow cards.
Correct and right. While a change in rule would say, if it's just a yellow card offence, if it's just, you know, you're off the ball, the two of you wrestle each other to the ground, the instigator is the only person yellow carded. That needs a change of rule. And I think it'd be a good change of rule.
Yeah. Who kind of puts these changes and proposals for rule changes through?
You're asking the wrong man, but I presume it goes through Congress. Yes, they would have an input. Like, I mean, when you take the rule changes, all the rule changes that goes on, like, you know, during my time, and even as a referee coming up through the system, like, they would bring referees in and ask them for their opinion. With the black card offences, like, they brought the committee in and some of our referees and our top referees in, you know, how do we cut this out? You know, it's like the, you know, one of the big things was, you know, and people have had a rate cut at the black card issue, you know, over this past number of, since it was introduced. But I asked the question, there's people with very short memories, you take body checking in our game at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, there's some young players now can't even remember what body checking is all about, because we've eliminated it from the game. And that's the one, you know, sometimes I hear people and they're quite negative about the black card, but there is no, but there, it's, body checking in our game is basically eliminated.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, that's the kind of tactic that was there 10 years ago isn't there as much.
And so that's the reason why, you know, when different coaches come in, they introduce different things and different tactics. And one of the things was body checking an opponent. So then the GA look at that, then how do we stamp this out? So that was one of the main instigating of the black card.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the one area that's been very successful.
Yeah, and I would agree with that one. Because the black card gets a lot of bad press. But another offence that warrants a black card is to use abusive or provocative language or gestures towards players. Now, you know, that is a black card offence, and that is what we're seeing. We're seeing two or three players shouting in a player's face, and a lot of times this is after they've missed a score. So it's not like it's not within the view of the referees, but we have never seen a black card for this offence since it's come in. Why do you think that is?
Well, that's incorrect, Colin, to say the least, because my information would tell me that yes, I'm not directly involved in refereeing at national level, but my information is that we've only issued two cards this year in the Championship in the Kildare Offaly game, where there was two cards issued for threatening or use or abusive or provocative language or gesture to an opponent or a teammate, right? So, but it's a good question, that's fair enough. And I think if you know, at the national referee level, I think that we're not implementing it. I think that's fair to say. It's not, you know, it's not clearly out there that we've focused in on it. And the deliberate pull down, deliberate trip, deliberate body collide, that got a major focus and it's working. I think that's working well. Is it fair to say that it's working for the abusive and provocative language to a teammate? The answer is no, right? So that's what I think, if I was, you know, looking from the outside in, that I would say, we're not going to change midstream here. You know, there's not suddenly going to be a massive clampdown now between the now and the end of the All-Ireland series. But I can see it, you know, when the referees meet again and the chairman and that group meets again for the beginning of the National League next year, I would suspect that that's something that they're going to focus on.
Right.
Let me tell you, as a referee, you know, and having been in that situation, you're down at, and you've been there yourself, you know, you're down at the Canal End and 80,000 people or 70,000 people in Croke Park. You know, you need to be standing right beside somebody before you hear what they're saying, the noise levels.
Yeah. You don't really have to hear sometimes, though, Pat. You can actually see just from the, you know, the aggression that somebody's in someone else's face trying to, you know, ram home the point that they've missed the score.
Yeah.
Do referees say they need to hear what's being said, or can you not?
Well, that's the thing, you know. Yes, we do need to hear what's said. And the problem is that, you know, these counties will appeal those decisions. And, you know, it's in before a committee, and it's you need a watertight case.
Yeah, but there's, it's provocative language. So I suppose even just laughing in someone's face might fall under that category, would it?
Absolutely, yeah. Or even, you see the one where maybe a fella goes in and he scores a point and he comes running and out and he jumps into his opponent's, body and kind of gestures towards him that he's after scoring. Now, maybe what you don't know was his opponent might have been giving him a whole load of stuff off the ball, verbals, before he scored the point.
Yeah. I find that a little bit playful if you score a point and you come out and just let him know that you scored a point. I think if you come out and start laughing in someone's face, you know, there's a difference between the two.
Yeah, there's a difference, but hey, listen, you have to take that variation out. You either go with it or don't go with it.
Yeah, it is difficult.
You know, you can't make it easy for, it's to try and make it as clean, as effective as possible for the referee. But I think it's something that the group will sit down and go, listen, we're not tight enough on this, we're not good enough at this, and we need to tighten on it, because there is a black card there for it, and I think we need to use it. Like, if you look at the, you know, even going back years ago when you were taking a line ball, when, you know, you could step, I remember Colm Joyce, or not Porrick, I remember Porrick Joyce from Galway, maybe he'd step in maybe four or five steps in over the line before he kicked the ball over the bar from a line ball. But now what happens is you step in over the line and you throw up the ball, you lose that advantage. So nowadays, you don't see anybody stepping in across the line, because it's a massive, you know, it's a massive,
advantage.
Issue. You lose the line ball, you know what I mean? So the ball's thrown in. So, and as I always say, there's nothing that focuses the mind like a hanging. And a black card for, you know, if we get it tighten up on it early on in the National League, you'll find that you could eliminate it.
In meetings you had when you were a national referee chairman, did you talk about how difficult this issue is, you know, the sledging,
absolutely,
and the voting, and how difficult it is to give a black card for that?
Absolutely, yeah. And the referees were, you know, we were getting a major resistance from the centre. You have to hear it, Pat, you know, you must hear the player. You must be definite about it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time, we've looked a lot of TV coverage over this year's championship, and there's times we see it very, you know, on our screens, and maybe it's time to use the video evidence and haul them in, and that's how you get reaction.
Yeah, maybe this retrospective thing, but I suppose on video you won't hear what they're saying either, just the optics of it is enough.
It's only the optics of it,
so referees can't really hide behind the excuse that they didn't hear what they said, you know what I mean?
No, they didn't hear, but human nature being it is, you know, he could say, no, I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, we need to get stronger. I think, you know, the group of referees needs to get stronger at it. Simple as that.
Right, well, a quick one before I let you go. Umpires, they seem to be a bone of contention with a lot of people in that they're friends of the referee. You know, they don't necessarily have to be trained. There's a lot of things happen off the ball that umpires are just unwilling to get involved in and bring to the referee's attention, and like, they seem to be there just to wave a white flag or a green flag, where you often hear people coming up with the idea that maybe young referees trying to get experience in the game, that they should be used as umpires and not necessarily just the friends of the referee.
Is umpiring where we need it at the moment? In my opinion, is no, it's not where we need it at the moment. Has it improved dramatically over this past 7 or 8 years? Yes, it has. If you look at a lot of the top inter-county referees at the moment, a lot of umpires are not their brothers or their fathers. There are a lot of boys who are on the umpire trail, and like, we have umpires, I know referees who use umpires and other referees use them because they're very good at their job.
Right, yeah, we're not saying all umpires are terrible, you know, but
and a lot of them, I looked at, I think it was in the Ulster Championship this year, if I can remember the game correctly, was it David Goff's umpires got a goal line, one goal, and the umpire was picked up a brilliant position. He was looking right across the goal line as picking up the correct position, and he'd give the goal, and it was an excellent umpire call. Yes, absolutely, his umpire position was excellent. We've got a lot of good young umpires. I tried to implement the age limit when I was there with, you know, referees retire at 50 years of age. You know, do we need to look at an age limit for umpires of 55 maybe?
Definitely.
I think definitely. I mean, that's my opinion, was always my opinion. I think, to answer your question bluntly, referee and umpiring has come a long way. Have we a further road to go? The answer is yes.
Pat, thanks very much for taking the call and explaining a lot of that stuff to us.
Thanks, Colin. Cheers.
Yeah, interesting stuff from Pat McEnany there, Conan. It's not the easiest thing to fix, although effort should probably be made to fix it at the same time.
No, and it's good to hear him actually. Like, he's not. I sort of thought, oh, referee's coming on, he's just going to give the same sort of bland answers that you might see on Sky Sports or something from referees that are always protecting their sort of colleagues. But no, he actually seems to have an appetite there to make things better, and he's not sort of bullshitting us either.
Yeah, the retrospective punishments is definitely something that should be looked at, because cameras, like you said, pick up everything. And if you know you're on the field and this is even a threat, it's just like, it's immediately, it's like almost like diving in soccer. You give the threat of retrospective bans and you get rid of it. So the appetite just has to be there to do these things.
In a sense, he's right, though, that he's like, things are improving as the years go on. It's the same with everything. It's the same with football, same with teams.
It's like, too slow for me,
everything,
Colin.
Everything goes too in cycles. Slow. But we always cry about it then when it's happening at the time. Like, oh, we need to change this. Like, we haven't really been talking about Slesian until the last few weeks.
Yeah, no, we talked about it last year. I remember us talking about it last year as well. It was going on. Oh, it was Tyrone and Donegal were in some massive... I think it was the first round, preliminary round in Ballybuffet. Was that last year? It was huge controversy. They were fighting, yeah, coming in off the field. It was a lot of goading and sledging then.
It's great.
It's this theatre element to this, you know. But, yeah, like, I mean, it's not something that's just come up in the last week. It's like, that's why I want to ram it home, because, I mean, this can go on next year and it come up again next year. It might be only an isolated game or two, but it looks awful. And why not just get rid of it?
Yeah, and there are ways around it, though. I remember he's right about coaches coming in and teaching the body check. Like, everyone has had a coach who's taught them to do that, like third man tackle. But I actually remember then when the black card came into club level, we all actually had to train. We had like a training session and we were doing drills how not to do a third man tackle and what we could do to try and get around it and stuff, but make sure you didn't get caught and stuff. So, in a sense, it worked.
That is despicable. That is absolutely despicable news. I'm surprised that went on. Who's this man? What? I want you to out this manager.
Fantastic manager.
Holy hell. I can't believe that's going on, genuinely.
Well, like, but it wasn't like we were planning on ways of cheating, but we were planning
on
staying inside the rules, but bending them a bit to suit ourselves and not get caught.
Ulster football, I'm telling you, I don't know the half of it. I'm too naive for even what's going on up there.
It didn't work. We're still waiting for a championship.
Maybe we should get Pat McEnany on every Monday to explain different refereeing decisions. Who does that? BT, is it?
Yeah.
On Sky.
Well, Sky. No, Dermot Gallagher does it on Sky.
Okay. Maybe not every week. But
and I can think of ways then to try and bend the rules every time he
tells me. We could have a bending the rules slot at the end of every show. All right. That's all we have time for this week. Thanks to Conan. Thanks to Mikey. Thanks to Padraig Duffy, thanks to Pat McEnany for all featuring on the show, thanks to Evan and Dion for helping put the show together. We're not sure whether to say we're going to be back on Monday. We're definitely back next Thursday, but just keep your eye out for sportsjoe.ie Twitter account. Don't forget to follow us on iTunes, just search for the GA Hour and subscribe and rate us and do all that kind of stuff. We might see you Monday, but definitely next Thursday. Good luck.
Took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.